Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for everything outdoors.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
Overdrive Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Whether you are new to predator hunting or looking to upgrade your equipment, Predator Hunter Outdoors will have you hunting after the sun goes down. Carrying a full line of lights, night vision, and thermal optics, along with tripods, calls, mounting systems, and more, check them out at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com or on Facebook at Predator Hunter Outdoors. Use promo code OVERDRIVE2021 for 20% off your order. Want to lengthen your time in the field and shorten your scouting time? Not only does the HuntWise app show you property boundaries, landowners' names, and in some cases even their phone number, but using the app will show you the wind direction on the map of the place you want to hunt. And the HuntCast feature shows peak movement times for various species, including predators. Get the HuntWise app at www.huntwise.com, the Google Play Store, or the Apple App Store. For only $59.99 a year for Pro or $119.99 a year for Elite. Use promo code OVERDRIVE20 for 20% off an annual membership. Good evening, everybody. Tonight, got myself, Kevin Rott, along with Mike Latrell.
How you doing?
Let's start off by hearing how your deer seasons went so far.
Interesting. So, I've only shot 3 does so far this year. I have not killed a buck.
Is it because you haven't seen him or just haven't seen one you wanted to shoot?
I have not seen one that I wanted to shoot.
Okay.
This will be the first year that I did not tag a buck. I would say so far, because I still have muzzleloader left and bow season left. I would say probably 8 years.
I remember, but right last year, you tagged out pretty fast.
I tagged out really fast.
Yeah.
And the year before that, I tagged out before rifle season. I was tagged out. I did have doe tags that I filled during rifle season, but I tagged out my buck tags before rifle.
But this year, your season has been different because of pressure in the area and different properties that you thought you were going to be able to hunt. Now you can't.
So that was the biggest, downfall and the biggest setback for my season so far this year. I had access to a piece of property that I hunted for the last 3 years now. I lost that access after the property owner seen a nice deer and decided that they didn't want me out there no longer. So decided that, send me a text one night and say, yeah, hunting is done here now. So it kind of puts a dilemma on when I didn't have a chance to go out and do any scouting on state land.
Right. Yeah, you didn't have a chance to scout anything else out because you planned on that spot.
Yeah, that was just my...
I mean, I ran into that same situation with 2 properties that are local to me that I used to hunt. One of them, they sold the property, and all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, we sold that and can't hunt out there anymore. I'm like, oh crap, that was a nice spot. I liked it. The other property, still have access to it, but now there's another family that built a hunting cabin back there and they're hunting the crap out of it, and it effectively cut off the deer traffic coming from the west, which is where most of the deer came from. It was already cut off to the north and it's already cut off to the south, and there really isn't anything that comes from the east. So effectively they kind of blocked it off, and I just haven't even bothered to try and hunt out there.
Yeah. So I have no problem going out to state land and trying other properties. It's just amazing how right before rifle season, you're already primed, everything's all set.
Right.
And then you get that text and then you're going, well, now I got to go try to find a piece right before rifle season that everybody else has already been on.
Right.
They've already done a bunch of scouting on. I'm doing it. I've seen deer. I passed up a couple small bucks on state land. But it definitely put a hinder on my season so far this year.
And then you said there's also been additional pressure on the other ground right around your house.
Yep. So the new neighbors that moved in, I used to be able to hunt that piece also, last year, but the new owners of the property, they hunt it. I was really amazed to see. So when I hunted that piece behind my house, nobody hunted that. It was a 40-acre piece that nobody hunted, and there was no pressure in that chunk of woods at all.
And you've seen a lot of deer.
We're talking 30, 40 deer a night. I would have no problem seeing coming out of this. It was a really core bedding area.
Until I went out there with you.
You killed it. You killed it.
Yeah, but we didn't see 30 or 40.
No, but what did we see?
Four.
Four. Yeah. That was towards the end of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We did get you a buck, though.
Yes, we did.
I killed, well, off that piece of property last year. I shot between me, you, and my daughters. There was six deer taken off that property. And I could have tagged out last year faster if I wanted to off that piece. But anyways, it was just amazing how you add that hunting pressure back there in that core bedding area, how much it changed in 1 year.
Yeah.
1 year's time. I've hunted that piece. Well, I've lived there for 8 years and I've had access to the piece behind me for seven. I've hunted that piece behind me for 7 years. And this is the first year that I am not seeing one. Well, I can't say that. I did shoot a doe back there. Mm-hmm. But
now, do you think that just the pressure made them go somewhere else? Or do you think they've actually knocked down the population?
I would say both.
Okay.
It's the Amish that moved next to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know them. They're meat hunters. They don't really have a antler restrictions. They buy multiple tags, and so they have, once they fill their tags, they'll have another family come in also to that piece and allow them to hunt on that land also. So I don't know exactly how many deer have been taken off that piece behind me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not seeing the numbers like I've seen for the last 7 years. So I'm thinking there's accumulation between hunting pressure, because like I said, it's a core bedding area. It's perfect bedding. And between that and the extra pressure and the extra hunters and how many deer they're actually taking off that property.
Right.
It definitely seen the numbers drop. I did shoot a doe out there early bow season. My wife decided to say, hey, our freezer is getting a little empty. Let's get something in the freezer here. So in Michigan here in my county, I'm allowed to get 10 doe tags. I filled three of them. Actually, I used one of my buck tags actually on a doe.
Mm-hmm.
So I filled two doe tags and I used one of my buck tags on another doe as well during rifle season. But
so that's what I was going to ask, is how many you shot during bow season or with a bow versus with a rifle. So you shot one with a bow, another two so far this year with a rifle.
Nope. I shot two with a bow.
Two with a bow.
And then one with a rifle.
Okay. Gotcha. Yep.
I passed up a lot of, you know, year and a half old bucks at the time. I was seeing a lot of big bucks on camera at that property that I had access to.
Mm.
So I let a lot of bucks go. I let a nice 7-point go. That was probably a 2-year-old buck that I most normally wouldn't have let probably go later in the season, but where he was at in the season, I'm like, I'm gonna let him walk. I actually seen that buck six different times. I had a chance to shoot that buck.
Really?
Six different times. and then all of a sudden, yeah, I get that text saying, hey, that's no more access to this property, which is, it's his property. He can do what as he pleases. It's just, yeah, it's a big heartbreak when you get that text going. Right.
So now you had that happen. How has the scouting been on looking at new spots since that happened?
So I decided to, you know, hop on the maps and look at some state land around me. And it's been really beneficial to me because I haven't had to go out and look at some of these properties before. So I really concentrated on, you know, looking at my maps and saying, okay, where would be a core bedding area? Learning how to read a topograph map helped me immensely. Actually talking with Josh Mapes, we kind of discussing how to read. I never understood really how to read a topograph map. Yeah. So that's helped me a lot. So I got to see some property that I would never ever looked at before. And I had to get away from the immediate roadways.
Yep.
But it seemed like the further I got back in, the less people wanted to travel that far.
Pressure. Most, yeah, it seems like a lot of your typical hunters tend to be very habitual and not wanting to go deep. I mean, I don't want to sound negative and say lazy, but a lot of them look for areas that are easy to access, fast to get to. And I can't blame them for that, because, I mean, like we were talking about just a little while ago before we started this recording, I get out of work at 2:45. I have, you know, say a 10-minute drive to get home, which that's rare. A lot of people drive further than that. So by the time you get out of work, drive home, get all your poop in a scoop, drive to a spot, you don't have time to make a long trek to get back to other spots.
Right, so you pick convenience.
Yeah, a lot of it is convenience.
Yep.
So if you're able to, getting back in there deeper, I mean, that's one thing they told us out west too, to get the best success, go deeper than other people do.
Well, the more hunting pressure in the woods, you know, pushes them, drives sure. them deer deeper into the woods, deeper into bedding areas, knocks them off the routine, you know, so you got to find new bedding areas as the pressure builds. I didn't run into too much pressure on state land.
That's surprising.
It is,
but
really.
You have a lot of state land over there.
Lots,
right?
I mean, property that I didn't even see a car or another vehicle at on some of these two tracks so far the whole season. But on that same token, I don't mind a little bit of hunting pressure in the woods also.
I go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I love someone else, multiple people out there, because one, it stirs the deer up.
It gets them moving. If they don't die.
That is true. That is so true. If they don't die.
Right.
Throws a lot of scent out there, so the deer are confused. I try to play the wind a lot on my deer hunting. So it's called like wind bumping.
Yeah.
So I play the wind even on other hunters.
If
other hunters are closer to the road, I try to play the wind, where if a deer was coming in between us, they would catch their wind.
They're going to move this way and you set up to intercept them.
Yeah. I try to play the wind on the wind bump immensely. And then, yeah, trying to find deeper core bedding areas is what I've been trying to search for right now. I have not seen. Now, I have not put no cameras out on state land yet this year. I guess it's not being not lazy, but it just it put me in that mood like, I want to be able to see a deer first before I go set up on state land and put cameras out and take a chance of losing my cameras stands. And but now that rifle season's over, I think I'm going to put some cameras out on some new property.
Is it really over?
No, it's really not over here in Michigan. No. So we have, we have a couple of days.
Yeah, that's something else we were just talking about too, is because in some areas of the state, which is the areas that we're in, even during muzzleloader, you can use any normal legal firearm through muzzleloader, which our muzzleloader goes from the 3rd to the 13th, if I remember right, just looking at it. And then right after that, it goes into late doe season, which goes from the 13th to January 1st.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I believe during that time, you still use any legal rifle.
Any legal rifle.
So it really, to say that rifle season is over is almost kind of a misnomer anymore.
That's true.
At least for the past couple seasons. Because they just started that, last season or the season
it's
before?
It's been 2 years now.
2 years, okay.
Yep. Otherwise, you had to have a muzzleloader during muzzleloader season.
Muzzleloader, yep.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's a...
And that's, you know, I used to really enjoy muzzleloader because not as many people did it.
No.
And because of that, the deer kind of got a chance to relax and breathe again and get back to different patterns and stuff like that. And you could get out there without having to worry about running into 10 other people. And the deer were more relaxed. You could tell.
Yep.
And now, doesn't work that way.
On that same token, though, like we were just talking about that convenience situation, it's getting colder here in Michigan.
Right.
The nastier the weather gets, and the colder it gets,
the fewer people you have out.
The fewer people I see in the woods.
Yep.
nobody wants to sit out there in the cold.
Yep.
I can't say nobody, but
fewer people,
a lot less hunters in the woods.
Not only that too, but to be honest with you, a lot of people, other than the fact that you can buy like 10 doe tags, a lot of people are tagged out by this point.
Yeah.
By the time the first official rifle season ends, a lot of guys are tagged out, especially if they're buck hunting, you know, they got their buck, and there might be a few that are still working on a particular buck. But yeah, like you said, it's cold out. I don't want to go out there and sit, you know, I've already got so many deer, blah, blah, blah. So there's still fewer, but I think there's still a lot of people out there compared to when it was muzzleloader.
And I'll see this. I'll witness this for the first time in many years this year, how many people are actually still out during this muzzleloader season. I'm looking forward to it actually, to put some cameras out. Like I said, I haven't done that yet on state land. Like, get deep in the core bedding areas and see what's actually left, made it through the rifle season and bow season so far here in Michigan.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, like we talked about when I talked with Josh in the last podcast, I mean, I've only made it out one time, and I was fortunate enough. That's a spot where I coyote hunt. The guy had a high doe population. He wanted to get sent out some does. So I seen deer. I shot a deer. You came out and helped me track it. We couldn't find that deer.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing. You hate to see that happen, but it does happen. That's actually the first deer I've ever lost. First ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a disappointment for me, but like I said, I understand that happens, and I still have opportunity to get out there. And I'm not, like I told you earlier, I haven't even bought a buck tag yet. I just want to throw a deer or two in the freezer, give to the family, and have some for us, because I don't have a lot of room left in my freezer with all that bear meat yet.
Yeah.
But I could still use to top it off a bit, and the rest I'll give to, you know, family and friends. So I still want to get out and get at least one deer, and maybe two. I haven't decided yet. We'll see how it goes.
So every year we try to put 5 deer in the freezer.
Right. You got a whole lot more mouths to feed than I do.
So we have 7 in the family.
Yeah.
So, my goal is to put, between me and my daughter's tags, we try to put 5 deer in the freezer. As of right now, we're only at 3, so I'm really concentrating on my middle daughter getting her a deer. She's never shot a buck yet, so any buck is fair game. If it excites her, it's fair game. So I'm really going to concentrate on this muzzleloader season and the late doe season to fill her tags. So if we can put 2, if I don't shoot another deer this year, if I can fill that void with 2 deer with her, then I'll be happy with that. Yeah.
So now the 2 deer that you shot during archery season, bow or crossbow? Both with the crossbow. Okay.
Yep.
And then for rifle season, you're using the Grendel?
6.5 Grendel.
Okay. And that's not the same rifle you used last year, right?
Nope. We just built this new rifle. It's only a second animal it's taken.
Right.
The bear.
Yeah.
We shot that black bear in September with it. And then, this doe.
And then how many deer did you take with the Grendel last year?
3. Yep. I had to think back on that.
And on all of them, you're shooting that 123 grain Hornady Black.
Yep.
And you had good performance on all of them.
Absolutely love that round on the big game that I've shot so far. I have not lost an animal yet. Now, shot placement is definitely key.
Right.
But I love the way that performs. Entry and exit wounds are beautiful. That shock of that round, it just seems to really do its job.
Now, my experience with it, and I've used a variety of bullets with it, but I've only had one deer go further in like 20, 30 yards of that round. And that was a bad shot on my part. I hit her behind the diaphragm. She went about 100 yards. We found her no problem, but I've had deer go as far as like 2 steps. Make one jump, done. But I've only had that one deer that went further than, you know, about 20-30 yards tops with that route, with that cartridge.
Yeah, so that 8-point I shot last year with it, he dropped instantly.
Now, thinking back on that, where was your shot placement?
That was through the front shoulder, quartering to me a little bit, and I'll just pass on the other side.
So that's really good shot placement.
Yeah, that was
got right through all the vitals.
Right through vitals, hit shoulder, he fell.
Yeah.
Didn't move.
Yeah.
My doe I shot with that Grendel. Both the does I shot with the Grendel. I don't think they either one of them. Now, they were both lung shots, mm-hmm. just purely lungs, no heart. I don't still think any of them deer went over 50 yards.
Okay.
My daughter's deer that we got on video last year, her very first deer, that deer, she went through both shoulders. That deer took about four steps and
I remember that one.
Was yeah. done.
Now, the ones that you said you lunged, when you gutted those deer, what was the internal damage like?
That was it. That's what I was talking about, that okay. shock of that bullet.
Yeah.
They were jelly. Mm-hmm. All them lungs were absolutely...
It's a big old ball of blood pudding.
Blood. Nothing left of them lungs. Yeah. They were... It was amazing.
And for anyone that doesn't know, the Hornady 123 grain black in the Grendel is actually considered a match bullet,
yeah.
if I'm correct. Now, they do offer the ELDM and the ELDX. The ELDX is actually a hunting bullet. You see that in the heavier weights, like in the Creedmoor. That's what Jeremy likes to shoot out of his Creedmoor. That's actually a heavier, I think the construction's different to make it more applicable to hunting. I'm not exactly sure how the construction's different, if it's just a thicker jacket or if there's like I've heard some people say there might be like an internal locking ring, like the old Hornady interlock. Whatever, it's more of a hunting bullet, where the ELD in the Grendel, as far as I know, is designed as a match bullet. It replaced the old 123 grain AMAX, which was definitely a match bullet. And I shot a deer with that AMAX, and that buck, he's on my wall up there now, but at the shot, and it was probably about a 40, 50 yard shot, dropped at the shot, got up, jumped over one pile of brush, collapsed, done. So I was very happy with that performance.
Yeah.
Now you and Randy Booty are the only people I know that have shot a bear with that round. On the bear hunting forums, a lot of guys, oh, you need to have at least a 30-06 or a 300 Win Mag or, you know, whatever. And I mean, I'm here to tell you that the performance I've seen with Randy's and with yours, I would not hesitate to shoot a bear with mine.
Well, you were with me when I shot my bear.
I was right next to you.
You know, we filmed it.
Yeah.
It performed beautifully. Would that bear go 30 yards?
Yeah.
I mean, shot placement again.
Yeah.
But it performed beautifully yeah. on that bear.
It did. And I was very pleased with that. And there's, I mean, I know I've heard several reports of guys even using on elk. One of the first guys that was really a big proponent of the round was Mark LaRue of LaRue Tactical, and he shot an elk at 400 yards with one, using the firm membrane as like 120 grain Barnes bullet, dumped it, shot it in the neck, but he dumped it. And I've seen people take caribou, sheep, you know, a lot of, you know, hooved animals, a lot of deer, pigs. We all use those for pigs. Grindles,
yeah.
So, I mean, even though if you look at the cartridge itself, it's not all that big, but for what it is, the performance seems to be exceptional, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, it's not the fastest bullet on them, you know.
No, matter of fact, it's funny because it always kind of cracks me up, and I'm not trying to argue a point with anybody or anything, but I see time and time again, guys on Facebook, Grendel's too slow. I haven't seen an animal duck it or outrun it yet.
Mm-mm.
And I get it that a lot of those guys want a flat shooting round. You know, your fast rounds are really popular. Your 22 250, 6mm Creedmoor is really popular. That's really fast. 243 is a fast one. That's a flat shooter. I get that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But when you're talking a smaller platform like the AR-15, the Grendel performs great. But to me, it's just a matter of knowing what the gun will do. And this is what I tell a lot of my customers too, because I see it online a lot. People say, zeroed at 100 and you're good to 200. I get that. There's a lot of rounds where that actually is pretty applicable and all that. But I'm a firm believer in take it to the range, find out exactly where it drops at different ranges, so you know where you have to hold everything else. And if you are comfortable with the round and familiar enough with it to know what it's going to do at different ranges, then by all means, that gun will do the trick.
Yeah, which we do.
Yep.
I go to the range with you a lot, and I want to see. I like being an inch high at 100. Mm-hmm. I try to be at an inch high. And we can bring it out to 200 yards.
And you're still
right there. And I'm dead on.
Yep.
I don't hold different. Yep. Everything is, I'm holding a very tight pattern at 200 yards still. I love the performance of the Grendel so far on big game that I've shot with it. Hogs, bear now. And then, it's the Grendel's killed.
Hog, bear, deer. Plus a ton of predators.
Yeah. More talking about the 123 game blacks.
Right.
That performance on that bullet. It has not let me down one time yet. I mean, it's my go-to gun now for big game.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have a problem. Nothing in North America I would think I'd have a problem.
I don't know if I'd want to use it on a grizzly.
Maybe not a grizzly. Yeah.
Anything shy of that, I probably would. If the grizzly was out there a ways, I might. And I'd have a few more rounds ready to go. But
all my shots are also, 75 yards. And my longest shot last year that I got on video with the Grendel was 240 yards.
Right.
And nothing again. So range didn't affect that bullet.
Yeah.
And the performance of it, it still performed really well. So it's my go-to. I like that round.
Yeah,
for big game.
I agree. I feel the same way about it. And I've been using that round for more than 10 years. I know that. Probably close to 15 years I've been using that round. And I mean, I've used it on everything from antelope to whitetails to hogs. I think the smallest animal I've ever shot with was a skunk. And it worked great on that too. Yeah. Now, the only downfall I will say to it is, in general, it's not very friendly on fox.
No.
Now, with a 95 grain VMAX, which is a load you're using for predators, it's worked the best on fox. But like the 100 grain Nosler ballistic tip that I use right now, not fox friendly. The 90 grain Nosler Barmageddon, not fox friendly. But that 95 grain VMAX, I mean, I got the hide hanging on the wall here. A red fox. It was actually one of the first times I took Jeremy out hunting. Daylight called in this red fox. It was a headshot at probably 30, 40 yards. And other than the fact it looks like the head swelled up like a balloon, there was almost no damage. And then I shot a gray fox with one, same load. And I bet you the exit on that was maybe the size of a quarter. So really not bad performance with that on fox. But the 100 grain Nosler ballistic tip and the 90 grain Barmageddon, both I've shot quite a few of that. And that's why, like right now during fox season, I've been switching to a different gun, because I would like to save the furs of a fox because they are so nice. But with that Grendel, I'm not going to save a whole lot of furs.
You don't see too many of them.
So, it's interesting when you talk about, what did you use before the Grendel for deer?
So it really depend on what I was hunting. If I was hunting in a field, or if I was picking hardwoods in a swampy area. So if I was picking a field, I use a 7mm Remington mag. Not very many deer walk away from that.
No, that's a cannon.
That's a cannon. Everybody knows I shoot when I touch off in the neighborhood. And then if I got into the swampy areas or the hardwoods at my father's property, I use a Marlin
30-30.
And I tell you what, that my dad bought me that 30-30 when I was 16 years old.
Is that Marlin or Winchester?
Marlin.
Okay.
It's killed so many deer.
Oh, yeah. They say, and I don't know if it's still applicable, but they say that the 30-30 has probably killed more deer in Michigan, if not North America, than almost any other round.
So, and it really, what I like about my 30-30, it loves the core locks. Mm-hmm. So at least it's an inexpensive round, but it patterns my core locks immensely. And that's just a reliable gun. I can throw that gun on my shoulder, and I'm really confident with that gun.
No, I don't know if you would use them in that gun, but Remington is now coming out with a new tipped core lock. So instead of that lead tip that's on the core lock, they actually have a polymer tip.
So I don't know if I would do it or not, because I have a box of Hornady.
Yeah, the FTX.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That I had.
Well, Lever Revolution.
Yep. That I had issues with that round in that specific 30-30.
In terms of?
Loading.
Oh, really?
Yep. It'll, after I fire the first round, when I go to rack the next round, that polymer tip is too long and it catches.
Oh, okay.
So I a box sits on my shelf.
Gotcha.
Now, yeah. And like I said, I trust my Core-Locks and they perform really well.
Core-Lock's been around forever.
Forever.
A ton of animals killed with that.
Bullet. Yeah, and my gun loves them.
It works, why mess with it?
Yeah. until I met you, I never even knew what a Grendel was. But ever since then, I have a hard time getting away from my Grendel now. Mm-hmm. If I can use it, I'm going to use it.
And, you know, there's a couple of bolt action options available in the Grendel as well. But it works so well in the AR platform.
Yeah.
I know Randy has one of the Ruger Americans in the 6.5 Grendel. He says that thing shoots really good. CZ makes a 6.5 Grendel bolt action for a little while there. I think they made a Savage Axis in it. So I know there's some bolt action options too. And the funny thing is, when people talk about the bolt action, they're like, why would you put that in a bolt action? It was optimized for an AR. There's so many better options in a bolt action. But if you were going to say you go to a place where you couldn't use a semi-auto and you wanted to have a bolt action, there are some available that you can get. And I think right now, best bang for your buck in that is that Ruger American. But again, I mean, the nice thing about it, I like about it is the recoil is so mild.
Yeah.
It has really good performance on game. They tend to be very accurate. And the 6.5 class of bullets generally has very good ballistic performance. So, I mean, it fills a lot of roles really well. Now, that being said, if you're going to go out west and you figure you're going to make 500-600-yard shots, yeah, your 7 mag's probably going to be a little bit better. But for especially what we do here in Michigan and anything, I would trust my Grendel on big game, probably easily out to 300-400 yards.
Yeah. Like I said, that doe that I shot, she was pushing almost 300 total. And yeah, it performed really well at that range.
Now, what was the biggest hog we shot down in Louisiana, you think?
Whew. It was that solo one.
Yeah.
That solo hog. That was a big.
I figure it was probably what? Over 200 pounds?
Easily.
Yeah.
I was thinking actually 3.
And that Grendel did great on them.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we killed what, 21, 22 hogs in
two nights. Yep.
And there really weren't any survivors.
No, anything that got hit.
Yeah. And then your bear, that was 165, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there.
Again, a good size animal. And anybody that knows bears knows that they have a big bone structure. And still really good performance.
Yeah, right behind the shoulder I put that bullet and it performed really well.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
It's a good thing you got it too, because with how bad you were shaking, I don't know if you would have been able to make a follow-up.
I don't know if I could have either. That's a little bit of excitement.
It was the first bear you've ever seen in the wild.
Yeah.
And we had plenty of time to watch that bear.
How long was that bear? We watched that bear probably for back this up a little bit. They had two bear coming into that site. That's
they
why.
Had two bear on camera coming in
quite a bit.
Right. And we had talked about it before he went out and they said, you know, that'd be great if we could get two in there, we could double up, both fill our tags.
Yeah. So when that bear came in, remember I told you, hey, let's see if that other bear shows up. So we watched that bear 5 minutes.
At least.
Easily.
Yeah.
Then we got film of this bear.
Yeah.
So I think that helped me settle my nerves.
Yeah.
A little bit.
You had a little bit of time to catch your breath and breathe.
For the shot. But then after the shot, it was back on. This is the excitement of, you know, did I mess up?
Right.
I don't know how many times I went back and looked at my film real fast on the ATM just to go, my shot looks good. It looks good. We got it in thermal. Remember, you got it in thermal. So you could see the impact.
Oh, yeah.
You knew that bear was hit well. That's something I'll never forget.
It was a very cool experience for me as well, just being there with you when it happened, you know. And I think it's funny because you think about hunts, and a lot of times different hunts have different memories of, you know, something in particular about the hunt that sticks with you. For me, with that time in bear camp, the thing that sticks with me, and I said it to you and I said it to Jeremy before he shot his bear, I said, you know what, somewhere right now there's a bear out there thinking about coming to this bear.
I remember you saying that. Me giggling about that. I'm going, yeah.
Yep. And it was shortly after that the bear showed up.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. So it was pretty cool. I mean, it was a really good time.
Yeah, I can't wait. Put in my tags, you know, put them for a preference point next year and do it again maybe the following year.
Yep.
I would love to be back at camp. That was something I'll never forget. And it was very fun.
I mean, we had really, our conditions weren't bad either. I mean, we had a little bit of rain, but mainly at night.
Nighttime.
It didn't get super cold. It wasn't super hot.
No, the bugs weren't that bad.
Nope, bugs weren't that bad at all. Matter of fact, I don't think I ever turned on my thermocell up there.
I didn't ever put bug spray on.
No.
Not one time.
And I mean, it's always beautiful up there in the UP. I love it. I mean,
well, we hit it perfectly too that later September. Yeah. And they're always ahead of us in lower Michigan.
Right.
So we hit it perfect color wise.
Yeah.
It was
gorgeous. Colors were just starting to pop in some of those areas up there. And, you know, I think I mentioned it when I was up there too. And I think I probably said I don't want to leave when I was up there. But you get up there. And I think one of the things that draws me to it, and I noticed this when I hunt out west too, is you get out there, you don't hear traffic. You don't hear cars off in the distance. You don't hear horns. You don't hear anything, especially at night like that. Last night that we were there in camp, we were burning up the trash. We had a little bonfire going, and that other guy showed up, and we're just sitting around the fire. You don't have that light pollution, and the sky up there is just amazing.
Yeah. It's a whole different sky, isn't it?
It is. You can see all the stars.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you add the quiet, especially if the wind dies down like it did that night. We had hardly any wind that night. And it was just so quiet. And just, I don't know, when you appreciate it more when your life is as hectic as it's been lately. You know, I mean, people in general down here, I mean, you got coronavirus, politics, work, the economy, everything else going on. It just seems like it builds all the time, but then you get up there and you can just sit back and relax.
One thing about that though, and it was my very first bear hunt.
Yeah.
Very first time going on in camp. Learning the difference between how I hunt deer here and that type of hunting for bear.
So describe that. What do you mean?
Just the how you set up. It would be the same. You know, playing the wind. We did play the wind on what stands, what baits we were gonna hit for that night. So that was the same kind of how I set my stands up.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just the rush every day of going, setting up the baits, getting them out there, and then the track that we had to make between all them baits, and then hunting them that night.
Yeah,
it was just something different about it. Was just you were always doing something in the woods and getting everything prepared, then getting back, and then we're checking cameras and seeing what baits got hit that night.
Yeah.
What time the bears came in.
Where it looked like they were coming from, how big were the bears.
Yeah. So that was just a little different fast paced hunting.
Yeah.
I was not ready for.
I think we warned you about that before we went up there, because you're thinking, well, what can we do during the day? We can fish, we can do this.
Yeah,
and I don't think you're gonna have much time to do
There was no cooking lunch, and there was no, you eat like a granola bar and you just slam a bunch of coffee and a Red Bull and you fly out the door,
right?
And then you're hunting,
right?
But now I learned, next year I don't think I'm gonna bring so much food. Because I had so much food left over.
Yeah.
Fast
probably
meals.
Still eating some of it, aren't you?
Yeah. So fast meals. Something we can just make really quick.
Throw in the microwave, heat it up, eat it while you're on your way to
That's another thing I didn't expect to do, is after we harvest the bears, that we had to get them processed so fast. I did not realize that we could not hang these.
Right. Yeah, you can't hang them like a deer.
No.
Not with the temperatures the way they were.
Right. So that was something, and it's a time-consuming job, especially that one night we had
two bears one night, and then one the next, and then one the next night.
Yeah, so every night we had a bear to process.
Yeah, the first night too, and that one was huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it was its own challenges, because, I mean, you're out in the boonies. We had generators, so we had some electricity, but nothing really fancy other than that. I mean, to process these bears, we set up a folding table, and Randy's bear broke the table.
Yeah.
So then we had to put some 55-gallon bait drums underneath, set the table back up, and then that worked. But with all the fat that was on that bear, it was like trying to hold a wet weenie on an oiled plastic table.
Yeah, that was a whole different experience by itself. I didn't realize how fatty greasy the animals are.
The ones we got last time, I don't think were that fat.
No.
That was the most fat I've ever seen on an animal, were those bears up there this year. Excuse me.
So, my deer that I've shot this year, too.
A lot of fat.
So, the old farmer's tail is more heavy fat on an animal, harder winter.
Yeah.
We haven't seen it yet.
Right.
But that's what they say. So, right. Maybe the bears were already prepared and the deer.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Now we get to get ready for bobcat season, too.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to that. I mean, we've actually hunting throughout the summer and reports from landowners. We've got quite a few spots where there's been some cat activity. So hopefully this year we can get that to pay off. Get you your first cat, yep, too.
I've never killed a bobcat yet. So I've been doing it for 2 years now, right? Yeah, two years. Two seasons.
Yeah. You haven't even seen one
yet. I haven't even seen one.
Calling. Now, have you seen them not?
Yes. Okay. So not in season?
Yeah.
Of course I see them.
Right.
Yeah. They're 10 feet from me and hopping in my truck.
Rub on your leg and purr.
Yeah. But I've so far in the season, it's a fast season though here too.
Yeah. We get 10 days.
We get 10 days.
Unless we go
way north.
East and north.
Yeah. So 10 days is with work and a family and
weather.
That's another big thing too. That time of year is the weather.
That's one of my biggest cranks about the fact we have such a short season, and when it is because it seems every year we have crappy weather during that 10 days.
Yeah, there's never, we might get a couple of good days out of it, but yeah, them 10, so it's going to be nasty. So.
And the thing too, like last year we ran into it a little bit, was deep snow.
Yeah.
So to get back to a lot of areas you'd like to hunt, some of them you can't get back to.
Yeah.
Other ones, you're competing with snowmobilers. Skiers, which skiers aren't competition to get back to your spot, but there was a couple times last year where we're driving down areas, all of a sudden here comes 5-10 snowmobiles, and we're like, they're looking at us like, what the hell are you doing out there? And we're like, we're just going here, So yeah, you have that to compete with, on top of just the fact it might be crappy weather, high winds, snow, rain, whatever.
Yeah, it was really deep snow last year.
It was in a couple spots, especially later in the season.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where, the first cat I got, there was almost no snow on the ground. The second cat I got, there in the video, there's no snow on the ground. There's none.
None.
There was a little bit of melted snow here and there, but those 2 years were... I've been successful. There wasn't a whole lot of snow. And then the 1 year in between prior to last year, we only called in one cat. I was with Josh. He called it in. He was running the caller. I seen the cat. He never did. That year it wasn't bad snow, but there was, probably a good 6-8 inches on the ground.
Do you think it affects the cats?
I don't think it affects cats very much.
No.
I think, and this is all strictly my speculation, is predators in general being smaller animals, the deeper the snow is, the more they're going to look for easy travel routes. So like if the snow gets deeper, those are the types of areas I want to get to are either going to be the areas where there isn't a lot of snow or there's easy travel routes for them.
So like heavy cover.
Yeah. So
less snow.
Yeah.
Well, so no different than coyote hunting. When we get a heavy snow, like that tournament that we did.
Yeah.
Deep snow.
Yeah.
Nothing came.
We didn't see squat.
Not a single predator came out into the fields.
Nope. Because it was so deep snow at that time.
So deep.
And that's why I think the bad part is we live so close to the lake, we get all that lake effect. And sometimes hunting the tournaments, I'd be sitting there, we're struggling because of the deep snow, and you look at other guys and they're posting pictures of their kills with no snow on the ground. I want to be over there, but yeah, I think that definitely is a factor. Now on the other hand, I think food becomes more scarce for them, but at the same time they don't want to expend as much energy to get that food. So again, going back to easy travel routes, thicker cover, stuff like that, I think increase your chances. But again, to get to some of those spots in the wintertime, if you have a lot of snow, unless you have a snowmobile or you're willing to ski or snowshoe, you're going to struggle even getting back to those spots.
Yeah, we worked our butts off last year for Bobcat. I remember that. It was rough to walk.
Kicks your butt.
Yeah.
I mean, especially little short-legged punks like me.
Yeah, I'm not that much taller. A 200-yard track through the deepest snow, it'll hurt you.
Your butt. Darn tootin' it will. And you, after doing it for, you know, a whole day for cats, because we can only hunt them in the daytime. After doing that for a whole day for cats, by the time nighttime rolls around, you're thinking, well, maybe I should go coyote hunting. And you're like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm too tired.
I'm spent.
I'm gonna crash.
Now I'm looking forward to using the bullpup. That's another thing too.
Old M17S.
Yeah, I don't know. I fell in love with that gun, one of Kevin's guns here that he lets me use for the last 2 years. I just like the short and compact and no recoil of the 223, and the accuracy of that gun is insane.
It's even for sale yesterday.
Really?
Factory original, brand new.
Well, why would I buy one? I can just use yours.
Good point.
This is a good point.
Mine's cooler anyway.
It is. No, I haven't killed an animal yet with that.
No.
So I'm trying to get, and I've been saving it for a bobcat.
Yep. So what Mike's talking about is a Bushmaster M17S bullpup. For anyone that doesn't know, a bullpup, the action is actually back by where the stock normally would be on a rifle or a shotgun. So what you end up with, a full-length barrel. So this gun actually has a 21-inch barrel, which is the standard full-length barrel for most of your ARs back in the day. Yet the gun itself is only 30 inches.
Yeah, short and compact.
Yep. So it balances really nice. It points really nice. The biggest downfall to it is a crappy trigger.
Yeah, the trigger's a little, you got to get used to it.
Yep. And if you did want to do a mag change, it's different than any other rifle you're doing, because the magazine is going to be back basically by your armpit.
Yep.
Those are the only two real downfalls. And it's not like it's a real light gun either. This design tends to be a little bit on the heavy side, but it doesn't feel heavy when you're using it.
It's very well balanced.
Except carrying it.
Yeah.
But when you're shouldering it and you're shooting, it's balanced well and you really don't notice it much.
No.
It points really fast.
That's what I liked about that, because we're in thick cover and we're in swampy areas, and I want something that I can pull up and get on target fast.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to getting on a cat with that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it'll do really well performance-wise.
It should, because, I mean, it did good job on coyotes. I've shot a couple of coyotes with it now, and it did really good on them, as long as you put the bolt in the right place. Yeah. And that's another thing too, because you have that 21 inch barrel, you get better velocity out of what you're shooting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that gun, and it's kind of sad that they discontinued it. You know, you can still find some around, and there's some guys that are custom building some, but there are no more of those made by Bushmaster for sure. Even when they made them, they were only making like 500 a year.
Oh, wow.
When they did make them. So it was pretty limited. But I think back when I first bought that, I think I paid like $499 for it. But if you found one now, like I said, that one I just seen for sale the other day, I wanted $800 for it.
Almost double.
Right. Now. Yeah. So yeah, it's a unique gun for sure.
So. Yeah, we have Bobcat season coming up. Along with predator season,
yep.
Muzzleloader
for harvester season's open. You got muzzleloader season coming.
You're
up.
Trapping still,
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, I am. It's been slow, but I only have 6 traps out, and 2 of them I haven't even messed with because I guys deer hunting that property, so I haven't even messed with those ones. But I still have 4 spots for urban coyotes, and that we haven't got a coyote in yet. Just fox and possums and coons.
You get some grays though.
Yeah, we got 2 gray fox.
So that's something I've never harvested either. I have never harvested a gray.
Really, just reds.
All reds. Yeah, I have not harvested a gray. So after you see, I was seeing your post and seeing your pictures, I was like, man, them are really pretty.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful animals.
Wow. Like, it would be nice to harvest one and get a pelt on the wall. That's a really pretty animal.
Mm-hmm. And they are aggressive little suckers, even calling them. They come in, you know, you've seen the fox, red fox, tend to trot in.
Yep.
Occasionally I have one run, but most of the time they trot. Every gray fox I've called in comes in on a run. And I've had them actually tackle my decoy And just, it was funny. First gray fox that I ever called in. I actually called in a gray fox and a bobcat on the same set. So this was right out of town. Of course, neither one of them were in season. And I had my caller with a decoy out in front of me, probably about 30 yards. And it was a small patch of woods. And I'm calling. And I don't know, maybe 10 minutes into the call set, give or take, I see something running, coming in through the woods. I'm like, all right, here we go. Coyote, you know, get ready. And my Grendel, of course, and all of a sudden, boom, here comes this bobcat. And he comes over, stops directly across in line with the collar and decoy, sits down, stares at the collar and decoy. And I'm looking at it in the scope. I'm, man, you know, cool animal, beautiful, watching it and all that. And he did the typical cat thing. He watched for a while, and then he took off. Well, crap, I'm not too far into the call set. I'll just keep calling, you know. Maybe I can call that cat back and get a different look at him, you know. So I kept the call going. All of a sudden, I see something just flying through the woods. And I look, and here comes this gray fox just screaming in there. He comes in. He rolled. He hit my Mojo decoy, rolled it, rolled with it, got up, turned around, boom, gone, just as fast.
Just as fast.
But I was just like, holy crap, that sucker's fast, and he was aggressive. I did end up going back to that property when fox season opened up, and that was the first gray fox I ever got. He's hanging on the wall, even though I broke his tail skinning it. But and that one actually called it a pair. I shot the first one and dropped it. The second one I hit, I never found it. And I think the only thing I can think of is there was blood, there was tissue. I heard him, you know, screech a bit, go through the leaves, and then nothing. So I went over there and I looked. There's blood and tissue and everything. I'm like, this fox is dead somewhere. So I start looking. I'm like, can't find it. I even went so far as to bring my dogs out there, hoping that they would track it. Well, at that time, I had Kimber, who was a lab Chesapeake Bay mix. She went out. She sniffed the blood. She starts going, then grabs a stick. I don't know, this ain't going to work very well. Maybe Maddie will work. Maddie's Dachshund Chihuahua mix. Take Maddie out there. Bring her over to it. She sniffs it. She's like, took two steps and walked right to a coyote turd. And as soon as she hit that coyote turd, she's like, Dad, I'm out of here. Let's go. Oh, back to the truck. Let's go.
Yeah.
So that didn't work. But the only thing I didn't think about is if that fox went up in a tree.
I wouldn't have thought of that either.
Nope, because gray fox climb trees like cats.
Gray fox do climb.
And I didn't even think about that while I was looking for that fox.
When it was wounded, it could have went up.
Yep.
You could have walked right underneath it and never even seen it.
Might very well have. I don't know, because it's not a very big piece of property I was on, but I never did find it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that either.
But yeah, they're really aggressive animals. Or that last one I trapped, he wanted a piece of me.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
It's kind of like I've seen dogs do it every now and then. I've seen other animals do it too. But as long as I was looking at that fox, he would just stare at me. But the minute I started to turn away from him, he's like, rah, 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 coming at me. I'm like, holy crap, scared the hell out of me a couple times.
Yeah.
And I put an end to that pretty fast. But it's just impressive how feisty those little suckers are. I mean, they have a lot of character.
Such a small animal.
Right. And but it's funny too. It's just, it seems like every year I see some, but I haven't harvested that many. I mean, we've trapped two this year. I think we trapped one or two last year. And I tend to call them in kind of like bobcats. I call them in the summer when they're not in season. So I usually see, you know, one or two a year at least. I do tend to see more red fox.
Yep, same.
But yeah, it's kind of interesting. And the properties, that's one thing I always used to believe too, was that fox and coyote will not share the same area. Everyone always said, oh, coyotes kill fox. How many times have we been out where we're on the same set and calling both fox and coyotes both now?
Yeah.
So I don't believe that anymore at all.
No, we witnessed it too many times now. Yeah.
Now I don't, we've even had them come in on the same set at the same time.
Yeah.
Which surprised the heck out of me. Matter of fact, I was hunting with Josh one time down by him, and we were calling. All of a sudden, I think we were using red lights at the time. I think that's what we had. Maybe it was night vision. I don't remember. But all of a sudden, we see eyes coming through this orchard, and here comes this coyote. And he stops at the edge of the orchard, and he turns and looks to, it would be our left. And what the heck is he looking at? Another coyote, you know? So we scan, look over there, and there's a red fox. And actually, we were standing that the landowner's house was over there, and they had a above ground pool. That fox was standing right next to their above ground pool, staring at the coyote, and the coyote was staring at the fox. And we never got a shot at either one of them. They both went their own ways. We never got a shot at either one of them.
Stare down.
Yep. So I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, kind of prove and disprove different theories by actually being in the field,
just witnessing,
you know,
it,
seeing it. You know, and yeah, someone can argue with me, but I'm gonna tell you, you know, this is what I've seen. I've actually seen it happen. So this is what I have to run with for my knowledge base, so to speak.
Yep.
So what about fishing? Are you gonna do any fishing this year?
Ice fishing. No, at this point.
If we get ice?
If we get ice. We didn't get ice last year.
Not
really
much.
So I went out 3 times last year, and that was it. And so 2 of the times I went out was on some sketchy ice. And I have a fear of ice.
You have a good reason to.
Well, I went through, and I, to the point where paramedics and divers and hovercrafts were out there, and so I have a lot of respect, let's put it that way, of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm hoping for some good ice. Fill my freezer back up with some fish.
Now, when you go out for ice fishing, you prefer panfish, you go for pike?
So I love bluegill.
Yeah,
especially in the winter.
It's, oh yeah, nice, cool, fresh fish.
Wow. I'll fill my freezer on bluegill and perch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tend to fish for mostly. I do some tip up fishing. Not very much. I have 2 lakes that there's no size limit on these lakes. There's so many pike in these lakes. Them are lakes that are fun to bring my kids out, and we'll put the tip ups out.
Cause you know, you're getting a lot of action.
A bunch of little hammer handles, and you might get a 20 incher but a lot of smaller pike, but a lot of action.
Yeah.
So the kids have a blast doing it. And I always pick them like really nice winter or sunny, warmer days, so they can play on the ice and whatnot. But I didn't get very much ice fishing in last year at all. So I'm looking forward to that. Actually, I'm going to help Jeremy put a sled together. He wanted me to last year, but we never got a chance to. It was just horrible ice conditions.
Yeah.
So we're I have a sled set up. That's all my poles. Everything is my auger, my drill. Everything is set up really nice and organized. So he kind of wanted to take what he had and incorporate what I have and put it on his. So we'll do that before the ice sets.
Yeah, because I think you went out once with him and Brecken last year.
Yeah,
right? Took the kids out together.
Yeah, we didn't have very much success that day.
Yeah.
It's usually one of my, so that lake that I brought them to, I'd say the first 2 weeks of good ice, it is the hottest time to be on that lake. You catch your limits fast. I can catch within a couple hours, we're catching our limits. But later in the season that goes, though, I don't know if them fish get wiser, move into different depths. They just move.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder on that lake, and I don't know. I haven't figured it out, I guess.
So here's a question. You fillet or butterfly?
I fillet.
Yeah.
Fillet every fish.
See, now when I was growing up and we did a lot of ice fishing, which I haven't done that in years, but we used to always butterfly. I never learned how to fillet a panfish. We would fillet perch every now and then, but most of the time we butterflied them.
Really? Mm-hmm. I've never butterflied.
We'd just scale them, gut them, slit the belly up and fry them like that.
So I have to try it. Does it get rid of the bones? That is my biggest fear with my kids. So that would be my,
no, you scrape the, you know,
see, that's that would be the only reason. That's the biggest reason why I fillet mine, and I double check every single fillet because I have younger kids. And
yeah, you don't want that bone
no
being stuck somewhere.
Yeah, that's all I've done though my whole life, and I'm so fast at it and so comfortable now with it.
Now, one thing I would like to try, and I've never tried it, even though we used to go ice fishing for pike and I've caught some. I still have pictures around me holding pike with my dad or my grandpa. I've never eaten pike.
Wow, we had to eat some pike then this year.
That's what I'm saying. And I don't know if they didn't clean them just because of the whole Y-bone thing. A lot of people don't like dealing with that, but I've heard a lot of people say pike is good eating, and I've never eaten it.
It is some of the most delicious, especially in the ice.
Yeah.
Through the ice, some of the most phenomenal, sweetest meat you'll have. It is gorgeous.
It, 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 it's sad because I've never had pike, but I just had whitefish for the first time last year. I'd never had that before. I actually just tried walleye for the first time like last year, year before. Yeah.
Huh.
But I eat bass.
See, no, I won't eat bass.
Really?
Nope. I don't like bass.
See, now we'd like bass. I like bass anyway. We caught some here on the lake by me. I used to live actually closer to lake than what I do now. We live right on the road that goes along the lake. So I'd have a friend over and we had a little two-person canoe. We'd go out on the lake and go fishing or go to one of the other small lakes, which now is all developed, so you can't fish them anyway. But we'd go out there and I remember catching bass. And what I'd do is I'd just take them, I'd flay them out, put them with some lemon and butter, wrap them in foil and cook them on the grill. And I thought it was absolutely delicious.
Really? So I never tried it like that. My wife and my kids, they want me to deep fry everything. Mm-hmm. You just bread it and
everything is great.
Everything is great that way. So all my bluegill fillets even are breaded and deep fried.
Delicious.
We make when I cook fish, it's usually a 50. We're having a fish fry, like, mm-hmm. So there's 50 fish, 100 fillets. You know, I have my parents over or. It's always a big ordeal just because it's a mess.
Right.
First of all, all that batter and everything everywhere. So I need to stock up. I don't have no fish in my freezer. Well, I can't say that. I do have some walleye left. I did catch some walleye this summer, small little lake by us. So I do have some walleye, but my bluegill is depleted. We did our last fish fry. So
one of my favorite memories growing up when it comes to fish is same thing like you said, we'd get a bunch of fish. And my folks had a little fry daddy. Everyone had fry daddies back then. And we'd make homemade French fries, homemade coleslaw, and fried fish. Yep. And I would damn near eat myself sick on that.
Yeah. So I'm always the one cooking too. So I make a batch of fish. Yeah. Right. And you bring it out. I always got to like sneak a piece
right,
off
to yeah. the side. Otherwise you won't get it.
I'll never get no food. They're emptying the basket before I can even finish it.
Now, so. See, another thing my folks used to do, too, is they'd go smelt dipping.
I've never done that either.
I've never done it because I was really young at the time. And I remember they'd get a babysitter and they're like, we're going smelt dipping. They'd be gone all night and they'd come home and they would have buckets full of smelt. And they would spend the evening cleaning smelt, which most of them, all you do is cut the head off with a pair of scissors, run the scissors up the belly, gut it. That's it. And then same thing, we deep fry them and delicious. I really liked it because once you deep fried them, because you left the tails and the fins on, crunchy.
Yeah.
It's like eating a chip.
Yeah, and they cook the bones right out of
them. Yeah, you could eat the whole thing and not worry about it.
Yeah.
And I know there's still a few people that smelt dip, but you don't hear about it as much as
not
you used
common
to.
Not very common, no more.
But a lot of it, though, I heard is because there just aren't the big runs like there used to be. I don't know why that is, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never really got into it. My family has never done it, but I heard that I've had it. Mm-hmm. I've ate smelt. I loved it. It was really good.
Yep.
I just never had the opportunity or.
You know, we always did perch, bluegill, sunfish. We'd catch bullhead, but usually threw them back or discard them. Pike, which we never ate. We used to go trout fishing a lot in the streams up in the UP. Every year we'd go up to the UP for, you know, a week, 2 weeks, fish trout streams, and we'd get trout. Trout was delicious. I loved it. Almost lost my train of thought here, but I've had bass. Now, my dad never had a boat, so he didn't go out in the big lake, but we had friends and neighbors that did. So they'd go out for like salmon and steelhead and get them. And then we had neighbors across the road that really liked to make salmon patties. Hmm. So we'd go over there and they'd have salmon patties. And I remember they did salmon patties, potato pancakes, and Swedish meatballs. Mm-hmm. You know, good eating. I wasn't a huge fan of the salmon patties, but they were good. Now, all that being said, my brother-in-law, who is quite the sportsman, this was several years ago, though, but he gave me some pickled salmon. And I tell you what, that was delicious.
Game changer.
Oh, it was awesome. I could eat that stuff, but I like pickled herring.
Yep.
I could eat that stuff all day long, but that pickled salmon was delicious. I could eat that stuff anytime.
Yeah.
Now, we used to go sucker fishing a lot in the spring too. I haven't done that in forever.
So we did. I used to bring my kids. We didn't do it last year at all. I don't know why. We just got busy with sports. They're getting older now, so they play a lot of sports.
Right.
But that's something I should do that this summer also.
If I remember right, they used to like to can suckers.
I've never ate them. Some people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they're good.
Yep.
If they're, I guess I can't. I don't know. I never ate a bottom figure, but a lot of people say they're really good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be opposed to trying it.
I don't remember if I ever ate them or not, but I know we had people around us that would can them.
Yeah.
I remember always hearing them say, can suckers. Well, okay. Well,
yeah. I've never done it.
Me neither. Well, I've never done it myself and I can't recall if I ate them or not.
Yeah.
But I remember doing that a lot with my dad going and hitting the rivers in the spring. You know, get poles out there, a little bell on the end,
yeah.
And just wait for that sucker to start ringing and reel them in.
Well, it's so fun. You don't have to be quiet. You don't
chill. Yeah.
And have a fire going and
the
kids can run around and play. And that's fun times.
Yeah, it is.
That's fun memories.
Kind of miss that. Mm-hmm. The same thing with trout fishing. You know, I mean, I used to love going up to the UP, go up and there's about three or four rivers that we would hit on a regular basis every time we went up there. And we always did good. First place I ever seen a bear in the wild. We came around a bend in the creek. It was just my dad and I came around the bend in the creek and there was a cub down drinking out of the creek. We came around that corner and he went running up over that bank.
Ooh.
He didn't start squealing or making any noise, but my dad's like, yeah, we're going to turn around and go back that way. And after that, he started carrying a pistol with him. But I mean, brook trout, rainbows, browns, I mean, just delicious.
Yeah.
Now, that brings me out something else I have tried that you don't hear about very much is fish eggs. Not caviar like sturgeon, but we were up there and we got some hen trout. And when we cleaned them, they're like, let's fry up these eggs. I'm like, fish eggs? Really? They fried them up. And to me, they were nice and crispy because they're so small. It was good, but I thought they were kind of bland.
Hmm.
I don't know. You ever tried them?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
It wasn't bad. It just, I thought they were a little bit on the bland side, but I tried them. It was like Rice Krispies without that sweet flavor.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, last time we went trout fishing was actually over in Wisconsin. A friend of mine has a cabin over there on a river and me and the wife and kids went over there and my daughter liked to fish. So I went down with her and we fished the stream. She got some trout and we had to take them up and we took half of them and cooked them there at the cabin, skinned them, cleaned them. I don't remember if I filleted them or not, but put some Old Bay seasoning on them and pan fried them. Ooh. All delicious. And then the other half I brought home and I smoked.
Well, that'd be good.
And they came out really good too.
That's the only way I like my salmon.
We
smoke all of our salmon. Steelhead I'll cook up on the grill with, you know, lemons and onions, and we'll just put on the grill that way. But salmon I have to have. We just smoke our salmon.
Really?
Yep.
My mom used to cook salmon, usually baked it. Now, I think probably the best salmon I ever had was actually my mother-in-law did it. And what she did is she baked it, but she put Miracle Whip on them and then crushed Ritz crackers.
Hmm.
Put that on it and then baked it. And I tell you what, that stuff was good.
Really?
That's probably the best way other than pickled I've ever had salmon.
Hmm.
I mean, well, other than smoked too.
Yeah.
Everybody likes smoked.
Everybody loves smoked fish. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We used to, that's another thing too. We go up to the UP. We'd always get smoked fish when we were up there. Cause I mean, that's really big up there.
Yeah.
Get smoked chubs, which I don't even know what a chub is, but we'd get smoked chubs or whitefish or what have you. And I mean, you still see it. Like, I know a local grocery store carries a lot of smoked fish, but prices on that, like everything else, are crazy too.
Yeah, it's really common in the UP though.
Oh yeah, it is. You know, that's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of stuff coming up yet. I mean, shoot, we're down to just over a month left of this year. We'll be rolling into next year and start all over again.
Start all over. Tournament season's coming up.
Yeah.
Bobcat season.
start thinking about turkeys in another couple months.
Yeah, we got to put in for our turkey permits and get that.
That's usually what, like April? No.
The season's in April.
Right. So application periods.
February 1st. I think the February 1st, I believe, is our deadline.
Yeah.
So it starts January 1st to February 1st.
Okay. So yeah, start thinking about spring turkey, get those active birds going.
Yeah. It's always some season, isn't it?
That's the nice thing about living in Michigan.
Yeah, there's a season.
Always a season for something, yeah, whether it be.
No, my wife doesn't like that.
No, of course not.
But someone like me as an outdoorsman, there's always a season in Michigan.
And especially with food prices going the way they are, mm-hmm. There's always something you can put in your freezer, whether it be waterfowl, upland birds, small game, deer, bear, turkeys. Yeah, I mean, there's always something out there. And I've tried most of the game animals in Michigan at one point or another. But there's one that I want to try yet that I hear is pretty damn good.
I already know what you're going to say. Porcupine.
Nope.
Nope.
I've had porcupine.
Oh, okay.
Beaver.
Really?
I'm going to have to talk to Carl maybe because I know he's been doing really good on them trapping.
Yeah.
And I've heard beaver is really good eating.
Huh.
A guy I know got one, brought it into work, made a stew out of it, and they said it was just absolutely delicious. And of course, they didn't tell me they brought it in, so I didn't get to try it.
Right.
But I would really like to try some beaver.
I would try that.
I
heard porcupine's really good.
It was
if pretty it's cooked decent. Properly.
Yep. I expected it to taste like gin because they eat pine so much.
Right.
So I expected it to have kind of that piney flavor. I don't remember that it did. I've eaten muskrat. No, wait. A buddy of mine got muskrat and ate it. I didn't eat it, but it was a real dark red meat. And they're an herbivore, so there's no reason it wouldn't taste good. I've had woodchuck. We've had coyote. We've had, I've had partridge, of course, grouse. I don't know if I've ever had woodcock.
I have not either.
And I don't know if I've ever had pheasant. Of course, pheasant isn't really a native bird to Michigan.
No. Nope.
Plenty of wild turkey. Grouse was really good. I remember I eaten drumsticks of grouse, which aren't very big, but man, they tasted good. I've had duck. I don't think I've ever had goose. Wouldn't mind trying that sometime. But yeah, almost everything else, one point or another, it's a game animal I think I've eaten in Michigan.
Yeah, it's a beautiful state though, ain't it? So we have so much something.
It really is. Politics aside and all that, it really is a nice state. You have, if you can deal with the winters, which down here aren't bad. Up in the UP, it's a different story, but down here ain't bad. But I mean, all the fresh water you have, the variety of game animals and fish that you have. I mean, it's a plethora of outdoorsman's opportunity, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I wouldn't mind sometimes the winters being a little bit more mild.
They are getting milder, though.
They have been. And to argue that point, sometimes I would like there to be more good ice on the lakes, where past few years it's been not really great ice. So that is the downside to having a milder winter. But other than that, yeah. Now we just need to get a... Sandhill crane season.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because I want to try them.
Me too.
I want to shoot one of those noisy birds. Yeah. Sounds like a pterodactyl flying over.
They look like pterodactyls flying over.
But, yep. Anything else you want to add for the evening?
No, just thank you for listening to us. And got a lot more seasons coming up. And get some more content for you guys.
Yep, we appreciate everyone listening. There's a lot of stuff coming up. You know, stay tuned to the page. If you're in this area, check out West Michigan Wildlife. They're a great organization that's local to Western Michigan. Do a lot with youth, do a lot with disabled hunters.
A lot of vets.
A lot of vets. Check them out. They do have a Facebook page. You can look that up. And make sure to check out our YouTube page, Instagram, MeWe, all that stuff. And we'll try and keep stuff coming to you guys.
Yep.
Have a good evening, everybody. We'll be right back.